I'm Alex Grant, and this is the Law of the Case podcast. Everybody is talking about the special counsel's report about President Biden's retention of classified documents in his garage and elsewhere. Or is the report really about President Biden's poor memory? If you're a card-carrying member of Team Biden, the report is gratuitous, outrageous, egregious, inappropriate. Or does the report, quote, fall within the department's standards for public release, end quote, which was the determination of the Department of Justice's senior career non-political appointee, Bradley Weinsheimer. I'm Alex Grant with the first episode of the Law of the Case podcast to help you make sense of it all. I spent 23 years in the Department of Justice prosecuting nearly every type of criminal case the department handles, and I am currently an adjunct faculty member with the Western New England University School of Law. I am here to give you the straight scoop on the law, and I am unafraid to tell you when the emperor has no clothes. This podcast will cover the legal issues that journalists miss because they have never stood up in a courtroom. And I explain the law without carrying the water for either political party. In this episode, I unpack the decision not to charge President Biden and the debate about his memory. Were the comments about President Biden's memory outrageous, egregious, and preposterous, as Jackie Childs from the Seinfeld show would put it? Were they relevant? Was the special counsel making a political attack? Or was he bending over backwards to see it Biden's way and not charge him? And now, given that the president's team has either outright said or insinuated that the special counsel was lying about the president's memory problems, is there anything we could do to determine who was telling the truth? Hint, there is. The special counsel report is an amped-up version of something that federal prosecutors do all the time when they want to charge a case or explain why they don't want to charge a case. It's called a prosecution memo, a PROS memo for short. I wrote up hundreds of PROS memos in my career. First, the PROS memo decides whether or not there is sufficient evidence to prove a federal crime beyond a reasonable doubt to a reasonable finder of fact. That means a judge or a jury. Second, assuming there is enough proof, the PROS memo makes a recommendation on how prosecutorial discretion should be exercised. Now, if that last part sounds a little squishy, it is. But that discretionary act is very important. If you've been following this story, most of what you've been hearing about is the first part, the proof part. Can the government prove the criminal case against President Biden for willfully retaining classified documents? That's where the discussion of Biden's memory occurs in the report. The special counsel spends most of his time on the ironclad requirement that there must be sufficient proof of a crime. But the main story, to my mind, is actually the second part, the exercise of prosecutorial discretion. If truth be told, the reason why President Biden is not being prosecuted is less about the evidence and more about prosecutorial discretion. Now, let's start with the elements of the crime. Under the Espionage Act, there are three elements which the special counsel's report lays out. First, the defendant had unauthorized possession of a document. Second, the document related to the national defense. Third, the defendant willfully retained the document. Now, keep in mind, this is the same statute that President Trump is being prosecuted under for the classified documents he held on to. Now, for that first element, unauthorized possession, the special counsel's report makes it clear that under the applicable executive order, former presidents and former vice presidents are not allowed to possess these documents. On the second element, the document has contained information, quote, related to the national defense, end quote. Almost everyone who has talked about Trump's Espionage Act case has assumed the documents being classified is enough to meet this second element. In fact, even legal experts have called it in shorthand the classified documents case. Now, in the Biden case, there are documents related to Afghanistan and specifically the surge in 2009 that are super important and classified, including their documents that contain classified markings. The special counsel says that courts have found that the classified nature of the documents to be highly probative of whether they relate to the national defense under the Espionage Act on this second element. So the special counsel in the Biden case, like most of the commentary about the Trump case, proceeds as if the classified markings and the classified nature of the documents are going to be enough on the second element. But here's something to keep in mind, and we'll put a pin in it, and we'll discuss it in later episodes when we talk about the Trump cases. Baruch Weiss, a former DOJ prosecutor and a current defense counsel who has done Espionage Act cases, published an op-ed last year in the Washington Post that said, quote, "I can tell you that prosecutions under that law," meaning the Espionage Act, "are tricky, and Trump's will be extraordinarily so," end quote. So Weiss goes on to say that the prosecution in the Trump case is going to have to show that the documents Trump retained contain non-public information that is potentially damaging. So if the information is already out there, like so much information is out there on the internet, it's not non-public. So there's much more to the second element. But as I said, let's put a pin in it because the special counsel in the Biden case might have relied on this element to say that he couldn't prove the case against Biden, but he didn't. The special counsel is acting as if the classified nature of the materials would be enough. So let's move on to the third element. Now, in the third element, which is the heart of this discussion, willfulness. Willfulness means that you know that you are violating the law. This has to do with the mental state you have to prove if you're the prosecution. Now, in law school, you learn that you have to prove in a criminal case a criminal act, which is also called actus reus, and a criminal mindset, mens rea. Lawyers love to invoke the Latin on you. But willfulness can be a difficult standard to meet. And let me provide a little context to explain what willfulness is all about. Now, if you intentionally assault someone by hitting them with a bat, the prosecution does not have to prove that you know that hitting someone with a bat is illegal. The prosecution just has to show that your act of swinging the bat was intentional, that you intended to do the act. In fact, you could even be convicted in some circumstances if you were just reckless in swinging the bat around and it hit somebody. So willfulness is a different animal, and it's a higher standard than this bat case that I just told you about. The prosecution has to prove willfulness in tax cases, for example. So the prosecution has to prove that you knew that you were violating the tax laws. So this is where the whole Biden memory issue arises on this willfulness element. The special counsel is trying to imagine jurors evaluating the evidence in deciding whether President Biden willfully retained this classified information. The information and the evidence is quite persuasive on this element, in my view. As the president himself has emphasized during his political career, he served in the Senate for a long time. President Biden was steeped in the ways of the government, knowledgeable about national security and secrets. I think Biden is pretty hard-pressed to claim that he didn't know the rules about classified documents. In fact, he said that Trump was irresponsible for leaving documents at his club. I think keeping the documents in Biden's garage is kind of hard to distinguish from keeping the documents at the club. Now, the content of the documents that he retained is also very important on this willfulness element. President Biden did not just haul out a bunch of documents from the White House. It's actually a fairly small number. He did not take the documents on a wholesale basis. He did not have a truckload or boxes and boxes of them. He took specific documents that he was particularly interested in. He wanted documents about his position on Afghanistan, about the 2009 surge. But Biden argued against the surge, even though most of the cabinet opposed him. Most of the cabinet was on board with the surge, and the surge did happen. He was taking an unpopular position. And then years later, after Afghanistan did not go as well as everyone hoped after the surge, President Biden leaves government service, and he wanted to be able to say that he was right all along. He wanted to say in 2017, look, as I'm writing my next book, I was right in 2009 that we should not have committed ourselves further to Afghanistan. So President Biden kept the receipts, the contemporaneous classified documents that showed that he objected at the time. The evidence of how much he wanted to keep those particular documents about Afghanistan and the surge displays a powerful motive to keep them. And a powerful motive goes a long way in proving intent. So when he was retaining these specific documents that he had a particular interest in, he had two things in mind. One, his legacy. And two, maybe the presidency in 2020. Those documents would do him good in either case. Now, the special counsel's report says, and I'm going to quote here, during that career, meaning Biden's government's career, Mr. Biden has long seen himself as a historic figure. Elected to the Senate at age 29, he considered running for president as early as 1980. And did so in 1988, 2008, and 2020. He believed his record during decades in the Senate made him worthy of the presidency, and he collected papers and artifacts related to significant issues and events in his career. He used these materials to write memoirs published in 2007 and 2017 to document his legacy and to cite as evidence that he was a man of presidential timber. That's from the special counsel's report. So it's hard to say that it was a mistake, that it was some act of an inadvertence that Biden kept these documents that he so badly wanted to hold on to. And he told the ghostwriter in a taped conversation that he had classified documents. But the special counsel says, well, I can't prove willfulness. Why? Well, the special counsel says that President Biden might have forgotten that he had the documents. Now, the special counsel makes a couple of other points on this willfulness element, but he's relying pretty heavily on this lack of memory. Biden was not willfully retaining the documents because he might well have forgotten that he had them. That's the argument. That's the argument the special counsel is making in his report. This lack of memory is a point, and a very large point, in Biden's favor. Even though Biden and his supporters are taking issue with it in great volume right now and raising their voices very loudly, his lack of memory is a plus for Biden in this criminal investigation. Now, let me just say as an aside, the fact that we are even here actually discussing whether the president can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to have violated the Espionage Act is a little crazy in my view. Why would President Biden walk that close to the line? And what about Trump for that matter? I would say the same thing about President Trump. It's crazy that President Trump would walk that close to the line and in fact go over the line. in order to hold on to some documents as mementos, which seems to have been what President Biden has done. So why are the American people going to be presented with two candidates who are anywhere close to have committed these very serious crimes? That's just an aside. That's not legal. That's political. But I can't help but saying it. So the point is, though, returning back to the special counsel's report, the special counsel is bending over backwards to see things Biden's way on the question of, is he guilty? Yes, he had a powerful motive. Yes, he had a powerful interest in retaining the documents. Yes, he was steeped in the ways of government, but maybe he forgot. That's how the special counsel is coming out on this. So are Biden and his team grateful that the special counsel is so understanding and that the special counsel has decided not to charge him? Not so much. Not so much. President Biden and his team are very upset because of the commentary about the memory. The president's allies put on a full court press on the Sunday morning talk shows as soon as the special counsel report came out. Now let's hear from Secretary Mayorkas, the DHS secretary.
The responsibility of a federal prosecutor is to investigate and learn the facts and apply the law to those facts. The prosecutor did this, the special counsel did this in the case, made a conclusion that there is no case, case closed, then made gratuitous, unnecessary, and inaccurate personal remarks, and those are improper. The most difficult part about a meeting with President Biden is preparing for it, because he is sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused.
You are saying some of the details are gratuitous. The vice president called what was in the report politically motivated. This was a special counsel that was appointed by the Biden administration. I wonder how you can ask people to have faith in the Justice Department investigating Donald Trump and not investigating Biden.
The Justice Department acts with unflinching integrity. The Attorney General of the United States personifies that every single day, as do the career prosecutors and everyone in the Department of Justice. This special counsel report is an unfortunate deviation from the norms that guide the Department of Justice throughout its history.
Do you think that the president compromised national security in his handling of classified documents? This report says that he stored some of the nation's most sensitive secrets in his garage. Is that responsible?
It is my understanding that national security was not in any way compromised by the retention of documents. The president, according to the report, cooperated fully with the special counsel's investigation.
Now, notice what Secretary Mayorkas says. He says these are gratuitous comments about the president's memory, and he vouches for how razor sharp the president is. Well, if that's the case, maybe the special counsel ought to reconsider whether Biden willfully retained the documents. Now, I was also struck by the question about, was this a responsible thing to do, to keep documents in this way? And Secretary Mayorkas avoids that question entirely because I think there's very little to be said for keeping classified documents in a garage. I don't think anybody can really defend that one. All right. Now let's go to the president's lawyer, who also appeared on the Sunday morning news programs.
I know you said you're not going to answer about when the transcript of that five-hour interview could be released, if it should be released. But I wanted to know more, if people were to read that transcript, you were sitting there, what do you think their takeaway of it would be about the president's performance and about his conversation?
The special counsel at the very beginning indicated to him that he knew that international events must be on the president's mind, that he was going to be taking the president many years back and simply hope for him to give his best recollection. And that's what the president did. I can tell you that his insinuations or the suggestions in the report about the president's interview just simply don't correspond with my recollection of how that interview went. And I frankly don't understand why they're in the report, don't believe they should be in the report. Beyond the interview, beyond the turning over the documents at every turn, the president cooperated with this investigation, and he did so in answering the questions that were put to him in the interview.
As someone who has been on the receiving end of the president unraveling your line of questioning, I have been. I know you have been. I related a little in that moment. One of the points that you've made and other legal minds have said about this report is that it kind of goes, of course, outside of the scope of norms. His reporting and who he talked to went outside of what would be normal, even for a special counsel. Do you think that should be investigated or looked into?
Well, in the role that I have, all I can do is point it out, which is you had an investigation that ran for 15 months, which could have been concluded in just a few months. There was never any question that the president had not engaged in criminal wrongdoing. He was the self-reporting party here. He had turned the documents over upon discovery, cooperated in every respect. And yet somehow in this report, the special counsel felt compelled to engage in this irrelevant, unfounded, and often pejorative commentary. And I think it's clear that that commentary is inconsistent with department norms.
Do you wish the attorney general had done more? Could he have?
I'm not going to speak to anybody other than the special counsel and his performance in that particular report. The president said the other night that he understood why the attorney general and thought, he could not only understand, but did not find fault with the attorney general's decision to appoint a special counsel. It was at that point that I got involved. And so I can speak to what the special counsel did, for which the special counsel bears the responsibility.
So that's Bob Bauer being interviewed by Jen Psaki on MSNBC. So this is pretty friendly confines for the president's lawyer to have the president's former press secretary interviewing him. So it sounds like they're saying very much the same thing, Mayorkas and Bauer. Notice how Bauer and Mayorkas are emphasizing the cooperation of the president. Now, that cooperation has nothing to do with whether the crime has been committed. Remember those three elements. They had nothing to do with cooperation. Cooperation is important, though, because it goes to prosecutorial discretion. Now, Psaki and Bauer, in their interview, they're tag teaming on talking about how sharp the president is. And if that's so, well, maybe the president really did remember he had those classified documents he was so keen to hold on to. And Psaki and Bauer are talking about international events. Again, the international events, completely irrelevant to the question of whether the crime was committed. And in fact, really a red herring, even to prosecutorial discretion. Mr. Bauer and Mr. Mayorkas are asked, well, whose fault is this? Why are these comments about the president's memory being made, and why are they being made public? Because keep in mind, the special counsel did not decide to make the report public. This is a report that went to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, and it was his decision to disclose it. And as I noted during the first part of this episode, when I quoted the senior career prosecutor, Bradley Weinsheimer, in his explanation of how it fell within the bounds of being made public. Nonetheless, both Mayorkas and Bauer want to make Robert Hur, the special counsel of the Biden case, the bad guy. So why not throw Garland under the bus? I mean, if the buck really stops with Garland, why not blame him? That would be the logical thing to do. Garland is the ultimate line of authority on the Trump prosecutions and on the Biden prosecutions. And that's why they don't want to undermine Garland. Because if you undermine Garland on his conduct of overseeing special counsels in the Biden case, why wouldn't the same thing apply to his oversight of the special counsel in the Trump case? So they want to have it both ways. Now, let's also hear from a couple former U.S. attorneys that I actually have a lot of respect for, Preet Bharara and Joyce Vance. Former U.S. attorneys, Preet Bharara from the Southern District of New York, Joyce Vance from the Northern District of Alabama.
Why you got to mention a man's dead child is really beyond me.
And that, I think, informs us about the motivation of all of this other stuff that, as you say, is on the margin. Maybe it's fair, maybe it's not. But it's very clear that there's, you know, whether it's political animus or personal animus, it's just not appropriate. Her concedes, by the way, if you keep reading through the report, that sometimes the questions that Biden was asked during the interview were just framed badly, and Biden actually would have to push back and reframe the issue so that the question could be asked properly. This is all happening just as the attack on Israel is underway. Biden is dealing with a lot of other issues. And just to bring it close to home, by the way, I mean, you know, I'm 63, so I'm no spring chicken, but I have found that especially post-pandemic, I have to just think out loud for a minute before I get years correctly sometimes. You know, even if the question is, when did you become a U.S. attorney? I have to stop and think, well, the election was in 2008 and I became the acting in 2009. And I just have to work through that a little bit. I think because, frankly, when stuff is years ago, sometimes even for an important date like the death of my mother during the pandemic, I have to stop and think through. So, yeah, I get that these may be legitimate criticisms of Joe Biden in some sense, but I also recollect Jeff Sessions, who, when he was attorney general, had a total failure of memory when he testified in front of Congress on multiple occasions. Donald Trump, who has had a terrible memory when being asked questions under oath in court proceedings. And why this should come down to Joe Biden's dead child, it's actually, I mean, you can tell I'm getting worked up as I talk about it. It is deeply offensive, and I think we're entitled to better from folks at the Justice Department.
You know, I'm really struck listening to this by how bitter and personal this criticism is. I mean, Joyce Vance is really going after the special prosecutor, who really could have been one of her colleagues at the Department of Justice. Second, she brings up comparisons with other people, and it's just, that's not very persuasive. You're kind of deflecting. The issue is the legal analysis, and not whether some other person like Jeff Sessions and some other contest could not remember something. So let's talk about this memory issue that everybody is so upset about. Is it relevant? Now, we've talked about willfulness already. If his memory is so bad that he can't remember holding on to the documents that he thought was part of his legacy, it does go to his mental state. And the lack of memory could well be the thing that tipped the balance in favor of not charging, at least according to the special prosecutor. So it's a little rich for these Biden proponents to be complaining about something that has benefited Biden so much. Now, what about the question about when his son died? Is that gratuitous? First, why even ask? That's a good question. I think anybody who is not involved in interviewing witnesses or not in law enforcement might think that was a very odd thing to do. However, remembering precise dates is very often a problem when you're interviewing witnesses. I've seen it all the time in my career. But witnesses often remember other things clearly that help you fix the date that something happened. This often comes up with children or teenagers. Their sense of time is just different. I've often interviewed sexual assault victims, and sometimes you could pin things down by narrowing it down, the events, to the time of the year. Was it the hot summer or the cold winter? Were you in school? Were you out of school? Was it during soccer season or was it after? Was it before your parents split up or after? Asking these kinds of questions help you figure out when one thing happened in relation to something else. So the questions to Biden about his vice presidential term, when it ended, or when his son died, these are kind of what I call anchor questions, big events that people remember and you can establish exactly. And from these anchor questions, you can ask other questions like, When did you move the documents to establish when those events happen in relation to the anchor questions? In other words, did you move the documents before or after your term ended? Did you move the documents before or after your son died? This is all very normal stuff, good interviewing technique, which it sounds like the special counsel was doing. It's not out of left field. It's not inappropriate if you're trying to figure out what happened and when it happened. Now, the special counsel's report says that President Biden could not remember within several years when his son died. Now, his son died in 2015. So in other words, he could not remember something within several years of something that happened 8.5 years ago. That actually does sound like a poor memory. He could not remember when his vice presidential term ended. That was January 2017. So this is not ancient history by any means. That's something that most Americans know. I think most Americans know that Trump was elected in 2016, and under the Constitution, the inauguration was in January 2017, like it always is, and Obama's term was over. So the fact that President Biden couldn't remember these really big dates or even come close to them, well, they do stand out. These kind of memory lapses actually remind me of the kind of lapses that Ronald Reagan had about the Iran-Contra scandal in the 1980s. Reagan was interviewed about this scandal just a couple of years after the events happened. Reagan had very little recollection about things that he was directly involved with and things that had happened just 2 or 3 years earlier. So you make your own judgment. Are we in Ronald Reagan territory or not? Now, as we've heard from Secretary Mayorkas, the president's attorney, Bob Bauer, Jen Psaki, they're saying it is not their experience with the president for him to be misremembering things like that. And that it was actually the special counsel who was misrepresenting what was said and how it was said in the interview with President Biden. Now, given the amount of coverage and how much the media and the political parties care about it, wouldn't it be nice to find out what exactly was said and how it was said during the interview? Ordinary people can tell pretty quickly if a witness is faltering with his memory if they hear it themselves. On the other hand, it's kind of hard when you are relying on interpretations. So how could we resolve this? The special counsel recorded the interviews with Biden. There are references to transcripts of the interviews he gave to the special counsel. If there are transcripts, there are recordings. And whether the recordings are audio or video, not clear. But if we got the recordings and not the transcripts, that would clear things up one way or the other. Notice Jen Psaki references the transcripts and seems to assume the president's lawyer, Mr. Bauer, is not going to agree to release them. That would tend to tell you that the transcript is not going to help the president. So would this be appropriate? Would it be appropriate to release a recording from an interview of a criminal investigation where a decision has been made not to charge? Well, there is some precedent for this. Remember, President Clinton testified before the independent counsel, Ken Starr, in 1998, about his alleged perjury and alleged obstruction of justice in the Paula Jones lawsuit. And after he did that, the video from his testimony was released to the public. And after it was released, the people, the voters, made their own judgments. And actually, to some folks' surprise, those judgments that people made were actually pretty favorable to President Clinton. So who knows? Maybe the recordings would clear things up and go in President Biden's favor. But why not make them available and let the people decide for themselves? It would solve a lot of problems, including this attack on the integrity of the special counsel and everyone working in that office. I'm just telling you, it's an unfair fight. The president can send so many people to attack the special counsel. The president and his allies can say that the special counsel is lying and make gratuitous remarks. But the reality is that the special counsel and the government prosecutors working with him, they can't respond. They can't get on news shows and give interviews. That is not what their job is. Their reputations are being trashed with no ability to defend themselves. So although I have a lot of respect for Joyce Vance, I think that what she said about the motives of the special counsel was pretty unfair. Unless you hear the recordings and it turns out that the special counsel was indeed lying about President Biden's lapses of memory, if you release the recordings and he did remember his son's death within several years, if he did remember the things that the special counsel says that he did not remember, then yeah, the special counsel was lying. He was misrepresenting. He was being unfair. But don't make that attack without the facts. Now, my final point, and this is about the exercise of prosecutorial discretion. The decision not to prosecute President Biden is much more about prosecutorial discretion than it is the evidence. Now, President Biden cooperated apparently fully. He sat for an interview for 2 days. Yes, he was completely cooperative, and that's what you would expect the President of the United States to do, and he lived up to that expectation. However, that cooperation is irrelevant to whether you committed the crime. I will also say that this cooperation was important in the exercise of prosecutorial discretion because the government, yes, they had an interest in prosecuting somebody who might have been criminally liable, but what they were probably much more interested in was keeping a lid, or at least an understanding, on the extent of the damage to national security, to be able to be sure that there were no further classified documents in the winds. And Biden's cooperation allowed the government to do that. So that's important. That is a valid consideration when you're thinking about exercising your discretion to charge somebody. But the other thread in the report is less about that cooperation, and it's much more about the leeway that is afforded to former presidents and former vice presidents, and the fact that other presidents, particularly President Reagan, apparently held on to classified information after leaving office, and that President Reagan and other folks held them in insecure places, just like Biden did. Now, that leeway that you're giving to presidents and former vice presidents, that's a matter of prosecutorial discretion, factoring in the status of the person and this historical practice. Again, has nothing to do with the three elements of the crime. And here's where I take issue with both the special counsel and the president's lawyers. Why does President Biden get so much deference on this? In the report, the special counsel puts a fair amount of weight on Biden's simple assertions that certain documents were mine, my personal property. The fact he says they're mine apparently means something to the special counsel. In fact, it means a lot in this report. These words, these are my documents, they're mine, they almost exactly mirror the words uttered by President Trump about the documents he retained. Apparently, President Trump just pointed to some of these boxes and said, those are mine. And to my ear, when I read the reports about Trump's possessiveness of classified documents, saying they're mine, that actually sounded like Trump's willfulness. He was going to take and keep the documents no matter what. When you look at Trump's case, he actually was afforded a lot of leeway, a lot of deference, a lot. The National Archives asked and asked and begged and pleaded, please give us the documents back, please. President Trump could have retained those documents for quite some time, given them back, and all would have been forgiven. That's the kind of deference and leeway that appears to be given to former presidents and former vice presidents. Now, think of how things would go if I, when I was an assistant U.S. attorney, went into the secure documents area and I took those classified documents out. I took them home. I showed them around to a few people because it kind of boosted my ego and I like to flaunt them, which seems to have been what both Trump and Biden did. They showed them to authors, to friends, to a limited group of people. So let me just tell you something. DOJ would not have waited one moment, in my case, if I had done something like that. DOJ would not have asked for the documents back from me. They would not have, sent letters. They would have been in my house with a search warrant, taking that material back pronto. The Department of Justice would have fired me immediately and probably would have had me detained in jail pending trial. And that's what I would expect, because anyone who works with classified information knows that it is serious business. Now, there appear to be three levels of how these Espionage Act cases go. So I just mentioned the regular government employee taking classified information. So that would have been me if I had done it as an assistant U.S. attorney. In that case, you're going to jail for years, maybe even decades. Some of these cases involving regular government employees involve widespread dissemination of the documents, sometimes for altruistic reasons. You have Edward Snowden blowing the whistle on government surveillance programs. That's different from just retaining, although in both Trump and Biden's cases, they allegedly disclosed classified information to at least a few people, like Biden's ghostwriter. But even for just retaining classified documents, an Air Force colonel, a retired Air Force colonel from Florida, got 3 years in prison for retaining. That happened in 2023, just last year. The Department of Justice press release only says he possessed and retained classified documents after he left the service. Nothing about giving the documents to the enemy or leaking them to the media. They didn't accuse him of being a spy. He retained them. So if you're the regular government employee and you retain classified documents, the book will be thrown at you. The next level are high-level government officials who are not former presidents or former vice presidents. David Petraeus is at this mid-level. David Petraeus shared classified information with an author, Paula Broadwell, who was also his girlfriend. Petraeus was a high-ranking military official, and he was able to strike a plea deal to a misdemeanor and got probation and a fine. He's living his best life these days and recently wrote a book. Now, another example of someone at this mid-level, the Petraeus level, is Sandy Berger, former national security advisor to President Clinton. Berger actually went into the National Archives. He took classified documents, stuffed them in his clothes to smuggle them out, and he did it on two separate occasions. And then he lied to investigators when he was asked about it. Sounds pretty willful, right? And in 2005, he pled guilty to what? A misdemeanor. He got probation. He paid a fine, just like Petraeus. So now at this third level, we have the presidential, vice presidential level, where there seems to be this extraordinary level of deference and leeway because of who they are. And maybe there are some reasons for treating them differently based on who they are. But let me just tell you, when you're treating them differently, it's a matter of prosecutorial discretion, not a matter of whether those three elements under the Espionage Act are met. The thing about exercising prosecutorial discretion is that people can have very different views about how to exercise it. A lot of it comes back to policy judgments about what the right thing to do is. Think about the reaction to Hillary Clinton's emails. Lock her up or it's no big deal. Wide range of opinions. So anytime you exercise prosecutorial discretion, your right to have your judgment questioned, because it's just less cut and dried than whether the elements have been met, whether the proof is sufficient. This discretion is less about the proof in the four corners of the law, and it's more about morality and what is good for society. And anyone can get into that conversation, not just lawyers. So why? Let me just wrap up here by asking, why did the special counsel explain his decision as mostly being about not being able to prove the case rather than exercising prosecutorial discretion? Why didn't he just say he was relying on prosecutorial discretion and Biden's cooperation? And why did he say it was a problem of proof? If you say you don't have a case because you can't prove it, you're in for a lot less criticism. Because how many people really understand the Espionage Act? I mean, I've just gone on for quite some time talking about this issue, and there's so much more to it. The special counsel's report is over 300 pages. How many people really understand the Espionage Act or the nuances of the criminal justice system? But that is what led the special counsel to emphasize Biden's memory, because the special counsel is trying to make an argument about the elements of the crime so that he can say that he cannot prove willfulness, that third element. Personally, I think the conclusion that Biden might have forgotten these documents, I think that's weak. It's weak. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Biden should be prosecuted if you can make a good argument for the exercise of prosecutorial discretion in Biden's favor. And on that point, given the strictness that this law has been applied to people like the retired Air Force colonel in Florida, that's a tough argument. The best thing Biden had going for him was his cooperation. Was that enough to avoid being prosecuted? Well, with that, I'll let you decide. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at Law of the Case Pod, on Facebook, and on YouTube, where I'll be posting video clips of the podcast. You can email the show at lawofthecase@gmail.com. If you have story ideas, episode ideas, or just something you feel curious about and want to learn more about relating to the law, send it in. Stay tuned for more episodes of the pod. Next episode, I will talk about the hearing in Georgia involving District Attorney Fannie Willis and what you would need to do if you were actually interested in getting to the bottom of her use of cash and whether she benefited from appointing Nathan Wade as special prosecutor to the hugely important election interference case against former President Trump.